This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On April 11, 2007, the Senior Statesmen of Virginia held their monthly meeting at the Northside Library in Charlottesville, Virginia. The three invited panelists, among the community's most familiar faces when it comes to discussions of local growth and development issues, shared their views on topics including land use, transportation, population growth, government regulation, and property rights. The panelists were Jack Marshall, of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, or ASAP, Jeff Marshall of the Piedmont Environmental Council, and Neil Williamson of the Free Enterprise Forum. Before an audience of about 40 people, each panelist made a presentation about the role of their organization and provided their assessment of the growth and development challenges facing local government and our community at large. This recording by Charlottesville Tomorrow begins with an introduction by Don Wells, President of the Senior Statesmen. He is followed by moderator Michael Ludgate, who introduces the panelist.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Wells, President of SSV. Glad to have you here today for this interesting event on growth controversies and decisions in our area. If there are any of you here who are not members of SSV but would like to be, I wanted to let you know that there are applications over here on the table, the sign-in table. Do we have any guests here today who are not members? Oh, wow. Oh, my. Do you folks care to introduce yourselves or... wow, there's a considerable number. I'm impressed. Well, good. Those of you who are guests, if you haven't been a Senior Statesman Forum before, this is a pretty typical one, this subject today. And our organization is a vehicle for senior citizens to get together to learn about issues, to discuss them, but also to potentially take action, such as passing resolutions to influence the political process. This organization does all of those things. We are interested in a wide range of public policy issues, and you're all welcome to join if you find that this is what you want to do. I believe there's no other business that I should announce today. A reminder to the few of you who have not paid your dues for this year, you know who you are. And if you speak to Jim Peterson today and give him your check, he won't send a letter to you. Is there anything else that I should speak to? Jim? No? Okay, Mike will introduce our panel of speakers then.
Okay, my name is Mike Ludgate, and I've been a member of the organization for quite some time. And they've asked me to get a whip and a chair and be the moderator today. But I'm sure these nice fellows over here are going to be gentlemen the whole way and take these issues on very studiously. If you were a member, this is just another plug for why those of you who are guests should be members, you would have received one of our spiffy newsletters who would have given you the background and of all of our participants and what the program was going to be. But since we have so many guests, let me just briefly describe and introduce our speakers, and I will introduce them in the order in which they will speak, and this was determined by a draw that was held in a secret room in Nelson County at some date in the past. But our first presenter will be Jack Marshall, who's the young fellow with the beard. And Jack is president of Advocates of a Sustainable Albemarle Population. And there are limits, he says, to the growth locally as well as globally. Smart growth is needed in the short term, but at some point, bigger is not better. Jack has a background in education. He has a PhD, an applied anthropologist. He had a teaching position at the University of North Carolina and then became involved with the World Health Organization before retiring and moving to Albemarle County. Our next presenter is Jeffrey Warner with the Charlottesville Albemarle Land Use Field Office for the Piedmont Environmental Council. Boy, you got a hard time putting that on a business card. he's been with the organization since 1972 and worked on projects approximately 270,000 acres of the Piedmont through permanent voluntary conservation easements. Jeff has been with the Piedmont Environment Council since 1999, not since 1972. Almost had you ready to retire, didn't I? he holds a degree in forestry and wood science and then a graduate degree in a master's in urban planning with a certificate in historic preservation from the Virginia School of Architecture, University of Virginia School of Architecture. And our final presenter will be Neil Williamson, who is executive director of the Free Enterprise Forum, a public policy think tank in Charlottesville. Free Enterprise Forum is dedicated to fostering communications on a variety of growth, land, and resource management and economic development issues. And he comes to us via a degree in communications from Radford University and has studied wine marketing at the University of California at Davis and member of the American Marketing Association, Direct Marketing Association of Washington, and a regular contributor to the Virginia Wine magazine. He lives in Greene County with his family. Some of the rules of engagement are our presenters will speak for 15 minutes to present their points of view. Then we will move on to the next one. At the conclusion, we will ask questions. You received 3x5 cards when you came in. If not, we will supply them to you. And if you have questions, we ask that you write them down on the 3x5 card. I will do the asking, they will do the answering, and we'll keep everything in good order and move it along in fine fashion if we follow those rules of the game. With that as background and anticipating these presentations, I would ask Jack to commence.
Thank you, Mike. And my thanks to the senior statesmen of Virginia. My wife says to also say the stateswomen of Virginia for addressing what I think is one of the most important issues facing our community and the world as well. Albemarle County has witnessed four uninterrupted decades of population growth. Our expansion has averaged about 2.1% a year, and it doesn't sound like much, but it's a pace that exceeds India's growth. Unlike India's growth, however, ours is largely a result of net migration, not the excess of births over deaths. Though Charlottesville City's population has remained pretty much constant at 40,000 during these last 45 years, the county's population has doubled to about 90,000 since just 1970. I'm not going to be spending much time on the impacts of this growth, but they're huge on our quality of life, on our environment, on our taxes, and on the very character of the community that I, and I bet most of you, cherish. We're now, Charlottesville and Albemarle together, a community of 130,000. Will we double again to reach 250,000? and after that continue to grow to 500,000, 2 million? Are the limits to our growth in the future? That's what I hope we'll talk about. Four kinds of reactions to Albemarle's growth in the past few decades can be identified. A small but powerful group has been delighted with the relentlessly expanding local population, for its members enjoy profits from land speculation and construction, or from an expanding market for whatever they sell. Another handful of people remains ideologically committed to the myth that constant growth is necessary for economic prosperity. This position is often accompanied by a political ideology asserting that government should have little or no role in controlling growth. In our capitalist society, they argue, our demographic fate should be left to the invisible hand of an unfettered free market economy, constantly guided, of course, by the search for profits. On our panel today, I think Neil represents this position. A second reaction, though increasingly uncommon, is indifference. A few residents are genuinely oblivious to the growth transforming the county around them, though it's not easy to be quite that ignorant. Most of the apathy about our expanding population is rooted in denial, with a willful blindness. Some folks just don't perceive the rapid local growth and its painful impacts. By far the most common response to local population growth has been the wringing of hands coupled with grumbling about traffic congestion, school redistricting, higher taxes, loss of open space, and a host of other complaints, but not accompanied by effective action. This passivity is often justified with the explanation that, after all, growth is inevitable. The fourth response was, until ASAP arrived, considered by local planners and activists the most enlightened reaction to unwanted population growth. Try to reduce the impact of sprawling numbers of houses and strip malls by directing them into designated growth areas and by structuring residential neighborhoods. This is the smart growth approach, first apparent as a planning strategy some 30 years ago, and it's guided many progressive communities, including Albemarle and Charlottesville, as well as important environmental organizations such as PEC, Sierra Club, and SELC. On our panel, I expect Jeff to present the smart growth position. With the appearance of ASAP 5 years ago, another response to local growth began to be heard. ASAP argued that there is a limit to growth at the local level, just as there is at a global level, and that every thoughtful, proactive community need not resign itself to growth by accident or bow helplessly to the desires of an influential minority who profit from growth. ASAP insists that our region's population growth is now just unsustainable, that in the foreseeable future it has to be thoughtfully planned, as the smart growth supporters advocate. But although smart growth is necessary, ASAP argues that it's not sufficient. Smart growth addresses where and how a community's population expands, but not whether it should expand. Over the long haul, smart growth merely accommodates growth. ASAP's approach goes beyond smart growth by contending that every community should try to identify its optimal population size, then work to reach and maintain a stationary size at roughly that point, or range, it's not really a point. The community's definition of what is optimal will likely change over time, so this ideal size or range should be reassessed at periodic intervals. To protestations that cities and towns and counties can't stop growth, we observe that land use strategies, primarily through zoning, define theoretical build-out and thus already serve to cap local growth. On every parcel in Albemarle County, there is a restriction on the number of houses or industrial units that can be built. If we tallied all that up, it provides a cap on local growth at this time in our community through land use ordinances. No one, however, has figured out, has tallied all those up. No one's figured out what the cap is. Jeff at PEC has come the closest. Very quickly, in one tax map parcel in west of Alma, this happens to be where I live, we did an analysis. Actually, Citizens for Albemarle years ago did an analysis showing all the houses at that point in this particular tax map area. Can you see the black spots? Those are the houses. Then we said, what would happen if current local land ordinance zoning laws were enforced? What could it be? What's the maximum growth? What is the build-out? What's the cap on local growth? And this is what we found. No one has done this for every tax map for the whole county. As I say, Jeff may give us some numbers on that. What should our community's reaction to local growth be? Our reaction should be determined in part by answers to several other questions. For example, is growth really a problem? Well, growth is undeniably good up to a point. But like a human cell, a human population can reach a point where the costs exceed the benefits. Imagine three pioneer families living on a five-mile stretch of a small stream. They can take water out for their household use in their garden and have an outhouse that empties into the stream with no ill effects. The stream can handle it. Now imagine not three but 30 families on the same stretch of river, or 300, or 3,000, or 30,000. At some point, the environment simply can't handle the population. At what point in our community, for our streams, groundwater, air, biodiversity, as well as quality of life, do we reach that point? How will another residential development in Albemarle County help those of us who are here now? Al Bartlett is a leader nationally in local growth management efforts, and he's from Boulder, Colorado, and has done wonderful work out there. He's issued a challenge. He says, can you think of any problem on any scale, from microscopic to global, any problem whose long-term solution is in any demonstrable way aided, assisted, or advanced by having larger populations at the local level, the state level, nationally, or globally? If you think you have an answer, let me know so I can pass it on to Al. He hasn't yet received a response he's comfortable with. Answers to another question will influence our community response to local growth. Does a community have a right to control its demographic fate? The answer for those of us in ASAP is not just a right, but a responsibility. ASAP argues that growth will stop in every finite area for one of three reasons. First, in that area, they could run out of an essential resource. It could be water, it could be land, it could be whatever. And it simply can't expand further. Secondly, continued growth could make that population, that area, that society so unattractive that nobody wants to go there anymore, or that people and the people who were there move out. And we've seen this in inner cities and in some lousy suburbs. A third option is that a smart community looks at this, looks down the road and says, wait a minute, is that what we want? Do we want to stop there? Or do we want to plan ahead, short of that, to define what we want to look like when we stop? We don't want to reach a maximum population. We want an optimal population. ASAP has recently launched an initiative to identify an optimal sustainable population size, and I'm delighted that our Albemarle County supervisors will be discussing our request at their May 2nd board meeting. The goal is for members of our community to come together and try to reach some sort of consensus on an optimal, sustainable population size. People say, oh, you can't possibly do that. There'll be so many positions. Well, there are a lot of positions on school redistricting, on who's going to be our next sheriff, on all these things. And a democratic society finds answers. This is pretty important for our future. We think that a community, an enlightened community, should try to pull together folks who are interested in this issue to define an optimal, sustainable population size. And we have a methodology that we think would work to help reach it. And I'm happy to talk with you about that in the question period if you'd like. In conclusion, ASAP's position on local growth introduces a new concept into community planning, just as smart growth did 30 years ago. Some traditional pro-growth advocates, unwilling to acknowledge qualitative changes in American demographics, economics, environmental health, claim that planning for a stationary population size is a radical idea. Well, I say, for anyone who cares about our community's future, the only thing more radical than stopping growth is not stopping growth. Thank you.
Again, as a reminder, we'll be taking the questions from 3x5 cards at the conclusion of the presentations. And now, here's Jeff Horner.
Good afternoon again. Thanks for inviting me to speak on behalf of PEC. I think most of you know the three of us all know each other well. We get along, and discussions like this are always interesting. We may go at it, but we do it in a way that we hope is constructive and not destructive. Since 1972, the Piedmont Environmental Council has been at the forefront of growth issues in Central Virginia, including Alamark County. Our work includes being advocates for urban areas that are desirable places to live, working with localities to adopt policies and regulations that protect the rural areas, and working with landowners to place land in conservation easements. In the entire PEC region, which runs between here and Loudoun County, since 1972, we have approximately 270,000 acres, that's roughly 425 square miles, permanently protected with conservation easements. Easements are a great tool for protecting the rural area, and here in Alamark County, under easement are approximately 65,000 acres, which is about 15% of the entire rural area. However, development still outpaces preservation. Consider that over the period in which 65,000 acres were protected, approximately 95,000 acres of the rural area were subdivided. The PEC's opponents claim we oppose everything. My standard response is to list the things that the PEC supports. We support keeping the rural area rural. We support protecting mountains and other scenic assets from development. We support protecting vulnerable natural, historic, and cultural resources. We support development in designated growth areas that reduces the amount of vehicle miles a family must travel to access jobs, services, and amenities. We support growth and development at a pace and in a pattern that is fiscally responsible and not a burden on taxpayers. Interestingly, most of what the PEC works to protect is cited by those interested in promoting growth and economic development in the community. We have all seen the real estate ads that advertise spectacular mountain views. Local economic development interests on their webpage talk about how our local lifestyle is complemented by the natural beauty of the Blue Ridge Mountains. The University of Virginia advertises its research park with a brochure that has a full panorama of the mountains and talks about the area's unmatched natural beauty. In 1994, Governor Allen's Opportunity Virginia report cited Albemarle's economic advantages as its abundant, breathtaking, scenic, natural, and recreational attractions, including mountains, rivers, and lakes. In January, I accompanied a group to lobby the General Assembly in support of a proposed bill that would allow Albemarle to establish scenic protection and tourist enhancement districts. After Senator Deeds presented the bill, Sally Thomas, Kat Imhoff, and Mark Shore with the local tourism group all spoke in support. Each cited how Albemarle's scenic resources contribute to the local economy and to efforts to market the county for business development. After they spoke, the Virginia Association of Realtors, the Virginia Home Builders Association, Virginia Agribusiness Council, and the Virginia Farm Bureau all offered enthusiastic opposition to the proposal. And it was interesting that these four state-level organizations all opposed a bill that would singularly and specifically impact only Albemarle County. Now, they had every right to oppose that bill. However, it does raise some questions about what is of value to these special interest groups. We know they value these scenic resources enough to aggressively market them to home buyers and business interests, yet they don't value them enough to help preserve them. Ironically, those of us in the community who work to protect these resources are castigated by those who sell and profit from that success. If protecting the property rights of the owners of that spectacular view is the primary responsibility, then wouldn't it be more honest to put that in the real estate ads? The standard line one hears from groups is that if you want to preserve the view, you should buy it, the implication being that we should not concern ourselves with things we do not own. It's curious that this lack of ownership doesn't dissuade their exploitation of that resource. In any event, we have no disagreement with groups that anchor their opinions to the perceived rights of individual landowners. However, we must scratch our heads when the groups that market these scenic and natural resources are equally enthusiastic in their criticism of groups like the PEC who are trying to preserve those resources. Now, in Albemarle County, the current population is roughly 90,000 people, and that's split equally between the rural area and the growth area. In the rural area, approximately 25,000 individual parcels right now, and of those, 6,000 have potential subdivision. And the potential development out of just those 6,000 lots represents an additional 30,000 to 50,000 lots in the rural area. That's enough housing for between 70,000 and 125,000 people. The problem is that the county's ability to control the rate at which those lots are created is essentially non-existent. Between 1983 and 2006, an average of 310 residential building permits was approved for the rural area. If we assume 2.5 persons per house, that's about 780 new residents. That may not sound that alarming, but looking at recent trends in Virginia's northern rural counties, formerly rural counties, we cannot rely on past trends to dismiss the threat of growth and sprawl in the rural area. In the 1980s, when rural area zoning was adopted, it was assumed that subdivision activity would be limited to farmers creating a lot for a family member or to add some additional income. But unfortunately, what we're facing now is not farming, but the growing of houses and subdivisions in the rural area. The point to understand here is that unlike the growth area projects like Biscuit Run, which require rezoning, the rural area zoning in Albemarle County is in place. So that development potential exists without any real discretion by the county. Now, the city of Charlottesville and the county's designated growth area represent a combined area of about 30,000 acres. That's roughly 47 square miles. Available information indicates that there is an approved residential development pipeline that could provide enough new residential units for the next 20-plus years of projected growth. Since 2000, a total of almost 11,000 dwelling units have been approved in the county with zoning map amendments, special use permits, and subdivision approvals, and another 1,800 approved in the city of Charlottesville. In total, the current residential pipeline for the growth area and for the city is now over 18,000 units. This does not include the rural area, which I mentioned is another 30,000 to 50,000 lots. That 18,000 units in the growth area in the city is enough for approximately 42,000 additional people. In other words, while the development community argues that the growth area needs to be expanded, their own proposals clearly indicate that such an expansion may not be necessary for at least another generation. But growth is the topic of this discussion, and the word has different meanings for people, and it's critical that I offer some perspective. Growth I define as increase in population. Any population increase is growth, be it from natural growth or families moving here, added population anyway, is growth. Development, which you hear a lot about, is really, it may or may not be a function of growth. Hollymead Town Center is new development. Is that the result of growth or not? Not necessarily, but a lot of people complain about development because they can see it. And finally, there is sprawl. And sprawl is what we term that dispersed pattern of development across the landscape. And I would argue that growth may not be sprawl. Growth, in fact, may not even be development. You may have 2,000 people move to Albemarle County, but move into houses that other people have moved out of. So just want to understand when we're talking about growth, development, and sprawl, that we see that they're distinctly different. The thing that worries me right now about growth and development is that, take for example Biscuit Run with its 3,100 dwelling units proposed. I got a lot of people saying, well, we ought to not build so much there and disperse all those houses throughout the county. Well, that is sprawl, and that's not what we want. The solution to concerns about growth and development simply is not sprawl. And while we in no way argue for an accelerated rate of growth and development, higher density, which is in this case the antithesis of sprawl, is not the problem. In fact, higher density is the solution to two of the key concerns that people express when discussing growth. We're not advocating that rapid growth is good, that is, an accelerated rate of growth, so long as it is accommodated by density or within the urban area. However, even a slow rate of growth can be accommodated without sprawl. Higher density, or what some would call smart growth or new urbanism, is not acquiescence to or even an argument for rapid growth. It's in a long-term objective, simply, that we must plan for. And, for example, one of the things that PEC has done in Northern Virginia, we recognize the threat to Loudoun County and Fauquier County. And a lot of people don't know this, but over 10 years ago, we started a study called Building a Blueprint for a Better Region. And we hired a design firm, and we went and looked at the vacant space around several subway stations in the D.C. metropolitan area and found a tremendous amount of developable land, within access to transportation. And that's where the jobs are going, so it all made a lot of sense. And, you know, unlike it's been characterized, this was not stuffing people in apartments or tiny townhouses. There's a whole range of housing types available. And so just what's being done here relative to population growth, Jack badgers me incessantly that I falsely accept the premise that growth is inevitable. I don't. But none of us know with any certainty what is coming tomorrow. And though I am certain, and the PEC is certain, that at no time soon will the state of Virginia allow Albemarle County to adopt a no-growth policy. Therefore, we are forced to plan for a range of growth scenarios that represent a range of possible outcomes and outcomes, hopefully, that we prefer. And this is the legal reality that we're stuck with. The state code and the case law support the interests of the development community. Even if Albemarle residents elected a board of supervisors that voted tomorrow to stop all development, such action would lose in court. It is okay to challenge the system, and someday the rules may change. But until then, none of us should expect that the developers are simply going to wait and see what happens. So the solution really lies in good planning, and yes, planning for a growing population. We must plan to protect the rural area, but we must also plan to have a growth area where people want to live. We need a vision for this community that allows for the creation of new urban communities. It protects existing neighborhoods. It preserves our rural area. And such a vision requires that we plan for an acceptable level of urban density and restrict rural development. Planning for density is not an incentive for accelerated growth. I'll say that again. But if we refuse to plan for density or argue only for an improbable limit to growth, I assure you we will fail to protect this community from the sprawl that has consumed Northern Virginia. We will also fail if we refuse to plan for and require density in the growth area. We will most certainly fail if the county refuses to adopt the measures necessary to further protect the rural area and our natural resources. Residents of Charlottesville and Albemarle County all realize they live in a special place, yet what makes it special to each individual is probably a very unique and personal perspective. What stands out for a lifelong resident may differ very much from the qualities that attracted someone who has recently arrived. Despite the variety of opinions, there is still a unanimous belief that something is happening here and that things are beginning to change. For many residents, commutes have gotten longer. To some, neighborhoods are noisier, and the quick runs to the store have become a frustrating drive on Route 29. To many, the small-town quaintness is gone. To others, the cost of living and the pace of life has increased to uncomfortable levels. To most residents, the small-town feel has been replaced by a hurried suburban lifestyle. Fields and forests give way to new subdivision. Local stores are replaced by national chains. The strip malling of 29 North is to most residents an embarrassment. To be sure, many residents welcome the new shopping and convenience, but there are a few voices of enthusiasm for the additional congestion. And most certainly, we don't see images of 29 North in the ads promoting this area. The point is, this community is on the cusp of change. The direction of that change is not out of control. It's not out of our control. Certainly, there has been significant change in the past 20 or 30 years, even the past decade. But there is no denying the prevailing sense that the rate of change has quickened and the results have become more noticeable and more costly, as we've seen by recent budget debates in the county. Recent drought and the debate over our new water supply brought to everyone's attention the importance of our local watershed and the realization that natural resources may actually be finite after all. This is an intelligent and involved community we live in, and it's difficult to hear it argued that we are incapable of understanding the impact of growth, and it's undemocratic to suggest that we have no right to address those concerns. In the debate, the issue of property rights is repeatedly thrust to the forefront as the single reason a community has no right to interfere with what is represented as inevitable growth and to address the impacts of that growth. It is unacceptable to argue that property rights, and more importantly, the right to have a role in the future of a community, have become the sole domain of land speculators and developers. Finally, it has long been argued that growth pays for itself. If this were in fact true, then why is it that all across Virginia, local governments are agonizing over increased taxation of local residents? If growth paid for itself, then increased development and population growth would not be straining local governments. In this past session, the Virginia state legislators finally acknowledged that something must be done to assist local governments in dealing with the fiscal consequences of growth, and new legislation was adopted that will allow localities to charge transportation-related impact fees for by-right development. Not surprisingly, this action was vigorously opposed by the state's Home Builders Association. Thank you.
Well, I must say, I commend you so far. Everyone's been practically right on the mark time-wise. So, obviously, you've made this presentation before. Again, recall, we'll collect the cards if you have questions and deal with those after our next presenter, Neil Williamson.
Thank you. And I also want to thank the senior statesman for inviting me to speak. Well, Jack, Jeff, and I almost never, all three of us, see eye to eye on just about anything. I appreciate both of them coming forward to be a part of this, and our conversation is definitely enriched by their perspectives. The Free Enterprise Forum's background is a collection of men and women from businesses as well as individual citizens that have joined together in support of free enterprise. As a purpose, we strive to provide balance to the public debate. We feel that without such balance, issues are often skewered by special interest groups who may not have a full understanding of the community ramifications for the solutions they propose. The Free Enterprise Forum supporters include a large number of professions, and our membership is still expanding. I invite you to join. Ours is the one pamphlet over there on the ASAP table. I purposefully... After hearing of the hat pull in Nelson County in a dark, smoky room, I made a point to take some notes and perhaps reply to some of the discussions that Jack and Jeff have raised. It may surprise you that Jeff and I are often on the same side of many issues. There was one issue at one time where the Planning Commission made a point to identify that the perspectives we were taking, Jeff was looking for increased density within the development area, and I was suggesting that the developer may be looking at a market niche. And they suggested that Jeff asking for more development and me asking for less was a unique opportunity. It is true that we would like to see more development in the development area. That is clear. That's where the infrastructure should be placed. It is also true that we believe that property rights are important. Back in the 1700s, our neighbor who's having a birthday here at the end of the week, Thomas Jefferson, wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness. Previously, John Locke had not put such a poetic pursuit of happiness, but put property, life, liberty, and property. There have been significant studies with regard to property rights and the impact on economies. when Jeff or others speak of land speculators and developers, I'd like to reference also longtime landholders, landowners, people like you and me, who may, all they have is their land. Jeff and I sat on a rural areas focus group that really worked hard to try and develop some innovative solutions to push the growth further into the development areas and relieve some of the strain on the rural areas. Right now, the rural areas for the past 3 or 4 years, probably the past 7 years, have been at or above the development in the development areas. I firmly believe that is due to government regulation and making it difficult to develop in the development areas. This is something that I see starting to change. Jack had mentioned, are there limits to growth in our future? I think that's a very relevant question. The other question is, who should place those limits? Jack and I have gone back and forth about my continued belief that placing an arbitrary number is digging a moat around the county, and who gets to man the bridge? When your child wants to live in Albemarle County and you're above the number, are you not? They're not going to allow to live? 18, you're out? These are not philosophical. These are philosophical questions, but they're not silly questions. If you're talking about a real number, there are real ramifications. Last year, the U.S. population hit the milestone of 300 million, just 39 years after hitting 200 million. Some see this increase as evil, a cancer that must be stopped before we use up all the natural resources provided to us by the Creator. Recently, one elected official said the ecological system is the biggest asset in the county. Well, we believe the ecological system is important. The Free Enterprise Forum believes the greatest asset in any locality is the people. There are some in Albemarle County who want to place this population cap. To me, I find that elitist, and it would be the equivalent of digging a moat. Regarding the prospect of population control, Daniel Griswold, the director of Center for Trade Policy Studies, wrote, "It would be a gigantic mistake for policymakers to seek to curb birth rates in a misguided effort to dampen population growth. As long as America remains the land of the free, a growing population will mean more opportunity and more prosperity to those of us fortunate enough to count ourselves among the 300 million. Interestingly, and with apologies to those who attended the university, Robert Lang from Virginia Tech's Metropolitan Institute said, "The U.S. is distinguished from other developed countries in that it's still in a state of becoming. It's a source of the country's vitality that it undergoes this constant redefinition of itself." Now, people suggested how much are we paving over America? How much of the U.S. is developed? I'm going to start with the United States, and then I'll talk about some of the available lands here in Albemarle County. How much is developed? Any ideas? 25%? 50? 75? 2? It's about 5.4%. And the Bureau says an area is developed when it has 30 or more people per square mile. Now, this is the U.S. Census Bureau. Now, American houses are getting bigger. From 1970 to 2000, the average house size ballooned from 1,500 square feet to 2,260. But this hardly means we're gobbling up even more and more land. U.S. homeowners are now, through smart growth, which, by the way, I'm for smart growth because what's the other choice? Unsmart or dumb? I mean, it seems as though it's I'm for smart growth. At any rate, they're becoming more efficient in their use. Between 1970 and 2000, the average lot size shrank from 14,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet. Housing in this country takes up less space than most people realize. If the nation was divided into four-person households, each household had an acre, everyone would fit in about an area half the size of Texas. We're not coming anywhere near becoming an asphalt nation, to use the title of a book that was penned by Jane Holtz Kay. The question has come up about how much land is available for development. It's interesting. I want to applaud the Piedmont Environmental Council and their work on bringing voluntary, and that's an important word to me if you can't tell, conservation easements, and highlighting the benefits to the landowner and getting bringing those forward. In Albemarle County, 6,396, is that right, Jeff? Were preserved in 2006, bringing to a grand total more than 66,000 privately conserved acres land in the county, acres of land in the county. Is that about right? Yeah. The we had run some GIS work earlier this year, and this may be off by a little bit, but we projected that there's about 11% of the land in conservation easement. Further, 3.4% of the land in the county is held as county or national park land. 8.2% of Albemarle County is composed of streams, reservoirs, and a 100-foot undeveloped buffer, which we're a big supporter of. We think that it's important to the life of the streams. 25.3% of the county land of the county is designated as areas of critical slope and therefore can't be built upon without a release. In total, just doing GIS work, 59.9% of the land in Albemarle County is developable. It doesn't say how much has been developed, but 59.9% is developable. The remaining 40.1% is undevelopable due to conservation easements, parkland, stream buffers, reservoir buffers, and areas of critical slope. The one of the big things that you can hear throughout my remarks is the importance of property rights and how important I believe individual rights are. In preparing for this discussion, I had the opportunity to review some material on the ASAP website, and I was most concerned with this quote, and it's on the site, www.stopgrowthasap.org. And this is a quote from a discussion that was a chapter in Closing the Gate, I think it was, Jack, and it's written by Jim Simmons. I have problems with people who claim it's my right to do, have, etc., XYZ. Who says, rights are what society decides to grant its members. Does everyone have the right to drive a car? No. You must be 16 plus demonstrate a certain competence. Does every couple have the right to have as many children as they please? Not if society decides they don't. The price for enjoying the fruits of society is giving up certain rights. I can't disagree any stronger. Thank you.
And we have a few minutes here while we collect some of the cards and get them sorted out. I've been in this county for 35 years and have seen a tremendous change and growth. And one of the things, and let me put this in the form of a question and see what your responses are. But one of the things that has concerned me is that my children had to leave the county for job opportunities, unless they wanted to work in retail or in medical, which they weren't. We've seen innumerable industrial jobs depart, not unique to Albemarle County by any stretch of the imagination, but nevertheless, they no longer exist. So that I saw a recent Chamber of Commerce study that showed that the large growth in employment opportunities existed in government, not necessarily desirable from my perspective. So, you know, what is one to do here? How is one to provide for opportunities, for jobs, and still, I mean, I think 29 looks terrible. And I remember when it was a two-lane road. I don't want it to be a two-lane road, but you know, build it and they will come seems to have happened right here. So, you know, there are a lot of dilemmas that we seem to be faced with, and I'm wondering if you all would like to comment on that.
The loss of industrial jobs, the loss of jobs, period, is not unique. even to the state of Virginia. I'll offer a perspective, and maybe it's more personal than PEC, but, you know, my father's from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, but he moved to Baltimore, Maryland. My mom's from Somerset County, Pennsylvania, but she grew up in Front Royal because her father moved to find work. She now lived in Baltimore, and they now live over in the Valley. My wife was born in Michigan, grew up in Baltimore County. We both now live in Charlottesville. My daughter was born in Fairfax County when we lived in Arlington. We're a mobile society, but this is a small college town, and anybody that wants to come here and find every job and any job, that's just not what this community has available. Now, if this community wants to, I grew up in Baltimore, an industrial town. You know, we used to look at that brown sky, and my dad would say, that's not pollution, that's bread and butter. To this day, I have a hard time eating things that come out of the Chesapeake Bay. But I guess, again, that's what does this community want? And all of us hear it. We see it in the surveys. This community has established what it would like this community to be, and I think we have a comprehensive plan that represents that. Now, if we want something different, then we need to change those policies.
A shorter answer, but essentially the same. No community has the responsibility to provide jobs for all its children. If my kid wants to be an oyster fisherman, what is Albemarle County expected to do? But a community does have a responsibility to provide skills so our children can find jobs. And I think it does a pretty good job of that.
I think it might be helpful to take a look at what the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council is working on right now, which is a discussion with regard to what Albemarle County and the region wants to become. They're calling it the decision between Aspen and Austin. While I refute their decisions on either end, I think it's an important discussion, and they've brought a number of things to the fore with regard to technology jobs and job creation. But while I agree with Jack, it's not the community's responsibility to provide jobs for every child. It is, in my opinion, the responsibility to create an environment that's hospitable to business.
Thank you very much. Having grown up in Pittsburgh during World War II, don't talk to me about pollution. Thank you. Well, we've got the cards sorted out. Our first question, and this is to all three panelists, would you prefer to live in a community of 100, 200, 500, or a million? 100,000, 200,000. And will you do anything about it?
My wife and I moved here 18 years ago from Indonesia. We wanted to work as consultants, and we could have lived anywhere in the world. In fact, our first task, she's Dutch, and we came from Asia, and she'd worked in Africa. The first question was, what continent do we want to live on? And then we spent 4 months in an RV looking at America and chose Charlottesville because it represented the character of a community that we wanted. My answer to that is a community of about 130,000, ideally with a good university and all its amenities accessible to us, near enough a big city, D.C., so that we can get there when we want. This is the community I want. And I think the next part of this question was, what are you doing about it? I'm fighting to ensure that it stays what I, and I think a lot of you, are here for.
It's a difficult question, I guess, on a personal level. I live downtown Charlottesville. My wife and I bought a beat-up old house 10 years ago or so, and it's really about the spatial pattern in which one lives, not necessarily the numbers. I mean, my friends from all over, I mean, even Northern Virginia, they come down, they marvel, I know all my neighbors, my kids know their neighbors. We gather weekly. If it's a warm night out, you know, we hear the quirk come out of the wine bottle and everyone just descends out. That's community, and I think that happens at all scales of population. I walk to work. I think what I want to live in is community, and what am I doing about it? I think we're promoting policies, which sort of everybody says, well, what do you want the community to look like? And give us a model. Well, Charlottesville is a wonderful model. And when I say Charlottesville, I mean the city of Charlottesville. So I don't know if I have a number that I could offer.
Well, I will speak to Jeff's neighborhood as a very vibrant neighborhood, and they all came out for the 10-miler, and Jeff wouldn't join me. But the as far as the community that I wish to see, I'm a big believer, and Jeff and I have discussed this, of the tapestry of a variety of homes, of a variety of people, all shades and colors, all incomes, that are integrated to allow for cross-pollination. I fear placing a number on that, on any community, would hinder the ability of that fabric to survive, and eventually would make it just one shade, and it would be a detriment to the community that I live in.
I did an analysis of the census figures of Charlottesville and Albemarle for the last 30 years. Charlottesville, Albemarle County, is getting older and whiter and richer. Charlottesville is getting poorer and blacker and, what's the other one, younger. It is clear that the policy we have in place today, allowing rampant growth, is not providing the survival of the tapestry that Neil described and all of us value. That's the first people to get burned with the kind of growth we're having now are not the privileged. They're not the ones that are forced to move to Louisa and Fluvanna and commute back for jobs here.
The next question is specifically for Jeff. How do you define a mountain?
I guess it's, I could speak in engineering terms, and I think it's fairly clearly articulated in the studies that were done in the Mountain Protection Ordinance. It's articulated what the mountain resources are, and it was a lot of research went into that, and it was a policy that was adopted, I think, unanimously by the County Board of Supervisors. So I tend to... there's a lot of issues which people think are mine, but are really simply reflecting what the Albemarle County has adopted into its comprehensive plan. So a mountain is not my definition. It's Albemarle County citizens.
Neil, for you, what is a development area?
Well, I'd actually defer the question, but because I have a trained planner on my right, development areas, generally speaking, are areas where comprehensive plans choose to focus residential growth and, in some cases, commercial growth as well. Is that the classic textbook definition, Jeff?
Yeah. All right. The next is a general question. Growth today, starting at 29 North, which goes from 4 lanes to 3 lanes to 4 lanes to 8 lanes to 4 lanes, has created a high accident rate on 29. Where was Albemarle County when the growth rate was in the 45 years of growing and taking place? What is the zoning of what commerce can build? Example, Best Buy and yet to come Albemarle Place, Hydraulic Road and 29. Quite frankly, don't hear a question in that, but I guess it's the last part. How'd we get here?
I've been very critical, I think, Albemarle County's land use policies relative to linking them to transportation policies. We've created a land use plan which relies singularly on that arterial that is Route 29. We're doing the same thing south of town on Old Lynchburg Road. We're doing the same thing east and west, relying singularly on Route 250. You hear a lot about, well, Albemarle hasn't built roads in 50 years, and I always say, well, where'd the money go? I mean, they've been spending on something, and what it's been doing is widening and widening and widening those arterials. The city of Charlottesville is a network of streets. You can get from one end to the other relatively quickly because of that network of streets. I live on a grid that links my street, runs from McIntyre Road to Park Street. There are times of the day you can have a cookout in the middle of my road because of that network of streets. Yet in the county, they're just absolutely horrified of connecting neighborhoods and connecting roads. And what they should have done years ago is created that, established that network of streets that would allow local traffic, residential traffic, commercial traffic to commercial areas and disperse that traffic. And I think you would have an entirely different 29 North Corridor than we do. So I think there was a failure in the past for any number of reasons. That's how we've kind of gotten where we are.
Anyone else like to comment? Just briefly, long-term planning in most communities, including Albemarle County, consists of thinking about next Thursday. The comprehensive plan in this state, communities' comprehensive plans, are required only to take a 20-year horizon. Albemarle County is likely to be here beyond 20 years. We're going to be here in 50 years and 100 years, and everything we do today will affect what this place looks like, and we're simply not thinking long-term enough.
I'd like to just clarify one point. The next Thursday, some of that is dictated when you talk about school overcrowding or needing to rezone, redistrict schools. Some of that is dictated by state law that says you cannot build a school expansion until you already have 18 trailers on the property. I'm not certain that that's such a good policy. I understand the reason for it, but it is clear to me that in addition to widening roads, which that money went to, it may just be me, but if there's one more traffic study for $1.5, $2.5, $3.5 million and not one more foot of pavement added or one more bus added to the line, it seems like there's always more information to gather, but there's a time to do something. And I believe that we're kind of at that tipping point, whether it's increased bus routes so that the key element to me in transit is buses, not light rail or anything else. And when does a bus line work? It's when you get out to the bus stop and you don't have to look at the schedule. You know in the next 10 minutes a bus is coming by. And that may mean smaller buses. It may mean a spoken rail. I don't begin to be a public transit knowledgeable on that issue, but I do know that if it doesn't work for me when I'm running down to City Hall and it takes me an hour and 10 minutes to get to a meeting where it would take me 15 in a car, you're not getting me out of the car. And I think that there is an argument for bus service for those types of trips. I don't walk to work.
I think, and I just add that you picked up on, and I was part of a group that looked at the streetcars, and we spent 5 days out in Portland, Oregon, and Tacoma, Washington. And what a wonderful experience, because we didn't meet with the politicians. We met with actually the local business leaders. And they were like, well, aren't your business people excited about doing this? We're like, well, not really. And they were floored. But there are communities all across the United States, large and small, that are implementing transit in a way that works. But what I really think is going on in Albemarle is there's this sort of refusal to acknowledge the urbanization of this growth area. They just continue to want to believe that everywhere you live is rural. I've had people in Forest Lake say to me, I love living there because I live in the countryside. I'm like, no, you live in suburbia. And I think Albemarle County is not transitioning how it governs well, maybe that's not fair, but it's mindset. I think the world of Bob Tucker. I have a lot of respect for Bob, but I feel like they need a they need to hire the guy that was the city manager for Richmond to come in and say, here's how you function as an urban area, because we just continue to make the same mistakes over and over again. Biscuit Run. Oh, my God, don't connect it to any adjacent neighborhoods because, my God, we'll have cut-through traffic. So we're just going to link it to the two arterials on either end and have the same problem. But I will say this, transportation funding is one of the most misunderstood things, and maybe Mitch could probably better address this than I could. But I was on a committee, the Transportation Funding Work Group, which was formed by the MPO and board supervisors a year or two ago, and people kept saying over and over again, you haven't built anything, you haven't built anything. So I asked Mr. Rue to put together a list of what's been built. I said, Harrison, either Alamar County supervisors are building a chalet somewhere in Aspen that they're not telling us about, or there's money in a bucket somewhere someone doesn't know about. I mean, we're getting money from the state, and it's being spent. We need to show the people what it's being spent on. But the other day at the Board of Supervisors, Jarman's Gap Road, which, you know, they want to improve, the guy from VDOT, and he almost sort of said it under, you know, his hand, because I didn't think he wanted the board to hear it. He said, well, the price just went up from $7 million to $17 million. And Dave Wyant's head jerked up, and he said, what did you just say? And so the $17 million for a road, when Alamar County's getting $2.5-3 million a year in transportation allocation, look at the community's six-year road plan. Three projects, three out of, I don't know, 100 road projects are right now even being looked at to be completed in the next 5 years. So the state of transportation funding in Alamar County, believe me, folks, it is not the elected officials of the city or county chuckling that they're not, you know, that they're somehow saving money and hiding it away. That is not happening. It's just the funds are not there for all of the roads that people want built so that they can live wherever they want, shop wherever they want, and travel wherever they want to go without congestion. That's the reality.
And it's all a function of growth. So the cost, the real costs of growth.
Okay. Well, thank you. We have quite a few questions here to get through, so let's move along. Jack, this is directed at you. Mr. Marshall, please clarify.